Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and we're approaching the holidays. In fact, we're just on the cusp of Christmas and New Year's. And so I'd like to share with you one final pre-holiday broadcast Q&A with Layla. Layla Mudin is our nutritionist at the Hoffman Center. This has become one of our favorite segments on the Intelligent Medicine Podcast, and we endeavor to answer your questions. Send us your questions at radioprogram@AOL.com. We'll try and answer as many of them as we can in 2014. Welcome once again to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast, Layla. Nice having you aboard.
Thanks, Dr. Hoffman. How are you doing?
Good. How are you doing with your Christmas preparations? You all got all your presents?
Good, everything? Good. We're having 10 people over Christmas Eve.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, so, yeah. So we're in the midst, but we're looking forward to it. Yeah,
good. Okay. Fun. So, did you get very stressed out this holiday season with the running to buy the presents? It was a little shorter run up to the holiday season because it was like Thanksgiving was late, and then it just I just can't believe it's already Christmas. It's unbelievable.
That's true. For us, it's more about the meal than the gifts.
There you go.
So it wasn't a bunch of scrambling for gifts, but more about the menu planning. So.
Yeah.
And luckily, my husband cooks beautifully, so.
There you go. So he's been dragooned into
the
kitchen.
He's been busy.
Right. And yeah. He works in construction, right? So it's been kind of lousy weather. So when the weather's lousy, maybe that's when you really get to take advantage of his culinary skills because he can't do that much construction, right?
Exactly.
It's
right.
Not exactly prime season for the building trades.
Mm-hmm.
Great. All right. Nice having a blue-collar husband, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Fix
it and cook. Yep.
There you go. That doesn't get any better than that. All right, and you're just
true.
And you're doing the intellectual heavy lifting here.
Right.
And
I married well.
There you go. Well, you know, I have to say though, this has kind of been a little bit of a stressful run up to the holidays for me because last week, as you know, because you were involved, we've been very heavily involved in damage control on I just have to feel that there is a concerted campaign to impugn the value and safety of nutritional supplements. And as a result, we're actually planning an event in 2014. Let's talk about that. Why don't you mention what we've got in store for people in February?
Yeah, on February 26th, that's a Wednesday, we're going to present the War on Natural Medicine. That you and I have done before. It's been a long time, but things appear to be getting worse with all of this. And now they're attempting to put a lid on everything, saying case closed. Like, as the audacity of that, really, as if it's not up for discussion anymore.
Right,
and it's ridiculous.
Let's not waste money even studying supplements. Stop taking your supplements. That's what the headlines are blaring.
Yeah,
and now it's even gotten worse. Lately, in the past couple of weeks, they've tried to impugn the herbal supplements, on the one hand saying that herbal supplements are valueless because they contain no active ingredients. That's actually something that people ought to listen to, a podcast that I did recently with Mark Blumenthal of the American Botanical Council, where we talked about how they used spurious methods in coming to that conclusion. Of course, they blasted that headline all across the New York Times, and then the AARP, the American Association of Retired Persons, picked up that theme. So a lot of misinformation. We'll tackle that in February. And also, recently there was an article about how green tea pills are causing people to have liver failure left and right.
My gosh.
Yeah, and I got to say that, there's no question that if you, take half a bottle of EGCG pills together with your pint of Jack Daniels, and maybe you're obese and you suffer from fatty liver, and maybe you take, 6 or 8 Tylenols a day, you're on hepatically toxic medication, they're going to say that it was the EGCG, the green tea pills, that caused you to have liver failure.
Oh, my goodness. Well, let's wait till they start talking about apples, and if you eat a bushel of apples, you will get sick.
Absolutely.
Should we stop eating apples?
Well, I think that
imagine.
there should be a federal initiative to create a drug category for apples, because it's actually been shown in a recent study that an apple a day keeps the doctor away when it comes to cardiovascular protection. And if that's the case, the apple growers of America are in trouble, because they're no longer growing a food. They're actually growing a medication. The FDA may be hot on their track. All right. Enough grousing. Look, it's the holiday season. Let's have a moratorium on gloomy thoughts. And we're gonna tackle this all in 2014. I think that for a lot of people, we remain a very important, albeit sort of a underground or guerrilla source of information. When the mainstream headlines are blaring, supplements are bad for you, or they're talking about, you know, how gluten-free diets are just a fad, or, you know, various things that they kind of snark on, that we're here to validate that natural medicine is an approach that is beneficial, and that supplements have their value. And there's no question that there's sometimes we have to be careful about supplements. That would be a mistake to say that all supplements under all circumstances are safe, you know, swallow bottles full of pills indiscriminately. But that's what we're about.
Well, you know, but I'll still try that Jack Daniels and green tea cocktail you mentioned.
Right. Especially after
reading another negative
article in the Times, I may have to resort to that.
We are left holding the bag with having to unravel all of this, and I think the media is counting on people being first of all, they're only interested in their own ratings. It's whatever spectacular that's going to get the most viewership, the most readership, so forth and so on. So, you know, there has to be a place for intellect here, because the American public is being dumbed down over and over and over. And we already talked about last week, you and I, about the propaganda that's being sent to media companies about, you know, anti-supplement propaganda and all of that. So, All right. Well, we're here.
We're here, and we will be in 2014, and additional announcement, my radio show on WOR Radio in New York will be back, and we're also syndicated across the country, so check out drhoffman.com for details. For those in the tri-state area of New York, New Jersey, Connecticut, on Saturday, which is January 4th, we will debut the new Intelligent Medicine show, formerly known as Health Talk, on WOR. It'll be heard from 1 to 2 p.m., although the program is 2 hours long, and you'll be able to listen to it in its entirety via the Internet. It'll be on from noon to 2. 1 to 2 will be live in New York City. I'm quite excited about that.
And that's wonderful.
That's actually one of the reasons why I'm not going anywhere I'm not taking any spectacular vacation to the Caribbean or to Europe, you know, to have Christmas in Paris or Vienna or Berlin. Because I got a lot of preparation work to do for the new show coming up. But I love it. It's going to be great.
It's well worth it. It's wonderful. It's a new chapter. It's absolutely terrific.
And here we, you know, just on the theme of good tidings, glad tidings, getting away from some of this negativity from the mainstream media, I have a very nice tweet. You know, I'm on Twitter. It's at Dr. Ronald Hoffman. And I've got a lot of Twitter followers now. And I get a little message whenever I get a new follower. It says, "Dr. Ronald Hoffman, you have a new follower on Twitter," and that follower is something called Love Grace Foods. I guess there's a person behind that, and they say at Dr. Ronald Hoffman, "Love your podcast. Merry Christmas from Melbourne, Australia." So you get a sense of the reach of the things that we do. A lot of people, and you know, they speak. They speak English down there, too. Although, you know, I wonder what an American accent sounds like to an Aussie down in Australia. I guess they don't need subtitles like we do. All those Australian actors, they do great when they do American movies, don't they? They manage to put on a very convincing American accent.
Good day, mate. Yeah.
Right.
No, that's true. That's true. You know, I mostly listen to radio via internet. We mostly listen to radio via internet at home. And there's even, you know, radio stations in Antarctica, all over the world, that are just absolutely amazing. So no wonder that you've got this reach now with the podcasts via internet. It's just great. Anybody, anywhere. And we're getting some really nice feedback.
So here's a nice letter from this. I think you'll remember this as one of our patients. You know, we're not going to give her name because she was one of our patients, but her first name is Frances. Dear Dr. Hoffman, I just wanted to let you know that I am grateful to you for all your help in healing my pseudo-gout condition. My first visit with you was on 12110, and I remember feeling desperate and convinced that the joint pain I was experiencing would one day cause me to become disabled. I had been in extreme periodic pain for several years and had exhausted conventional medicine options. You were my last resort. I remember on my first visit, you were so kind, understanding, and you gave me hope. That couldn't have been me, Layla. Does that sound like me? No way.
Nah.
She must have got me on a good day. Okay, so she continues. Your exact words were, quote, one day the pain will be a distant memory. Well, that day has come. I waited to write to you because I wanted to be sure. When I left your office on 10-7-12, I was inspired to do the detox program and then to stick to my diet. I guess she listened to you, Layla, too, because you were the one who put her on the special diet. That gave me significant results. She says, that gave me significant results, but not a complete cure. Then I remembered one of our conversations about stress and exercise. I told you that I did yoga and you were supportive of it. After the detox program, I decided to examine my yoga practice and started a different yoga program. It's called Phoenix Rising Yoga Therapy. So I'll give that a plug. Apparently the combination of detox, diet, supplements, and yoga has turned the condition around. I am today pain-free, stress-free, and completely in debt to you. I cannot thank you enough for giving me back my health again. I wish you all the best and hope you have a wonderful new year. Sincerely, Frances. And that's very nice of you to send. Sometimes I wonder, you know, people sometimes disappear from the practice and it, you know, maybe because they lost interest or maybe they just ran out of money or maybe they weren't better. But it's really nice to get positive feedback from people who, you know, they're not coming back because they're better. That's great to hear.
That's very, very gratifying. Yeah.
And I'll share one other with you. This one is from, what is her name? Oh, I won't give her name. So my lady writes, dear Dr. Hoffman, you probably don't remember, but my daughter and I visited you a few years ago. Julia had been diagnosed with Crohn's disease, and most of her symptoms had subsided soon after she made significant dietary changes, but she still wasn't able to gain back any of the weight she'd lost. You noticed that her elbows were very dry. I did an intestinal permeability test on her. It turned out that she wasn't absorbing enough essential fatty acids. This was the proof that our nutritionist needed in order to figure out that another test had come out as inconclusive, needed to be followed through with. And because of your keen observation, after 4 long years, we were able to find the missing piece of her health puzzle. She was able to gain back all of the weight she had lost. And then some, now almost 2 years later, Julia looks happier and healthier than ever before. That's why we haven't been in for a follow-up visit, although she might come in for a checkup in 2014. Yada, yada. And it's, mom, who's writing this, has become so excited about this whole thing, is that she has become a lifestyle coach, incorporating a certified health coach. That's actually in capital letters, certified health coach. That's a kind of credential that you can get. And those folks are great. They are lay people who've undertaken additional study. You know, many of them are out in the community helping people transform their lives, especially if they have direct experience with their own health or with the health of a loved one. I'm all for it. It's a good thing.
Which is the whole point of integrative and complementary medicine. Look at the differences here. These patients got well. They don't need us as much as they did anymore. That's a good thing. We applaud them. We want them to get well, as opposed to sick care.
Yeah.
Now, what would somebody with pseudo-gout...
Right.
Yeah, with dependence on medications, keeping them coming back, checking their liver function, checking for this, writing a new prescription, but the bottom line is they're only taking care of a symptom. They're not finding out the cause. And is the great difference between integrative complementary medicine and mainstream medicine, which is all about sick care and keeping people dependent on prescriptions. So
That's very well said, you know, and I think... And part of the problem is that for some conditions like pseudo-gout, there aren't any really satisfactory treatments except for putting patients on pain medication that can be erosive to the gastrointestinal tract and cause serious problems, bleeding, you know, et cetera. So anyway, so good news on that front. Shall we get to questions? Because that's what this is all about. And last week, because we were so busy rebutting the anti-vitamin propaganda in the media that we didn't get around to listener questions. So why don't you hit us with one of the questions that we have in our mailbox.
This one comes from Kimberly. And she says, and this isn't a problem we see too often, but we do on occasion. She says, I have tried for about 6 years to gain weight. I'm 5'5" and a constant 90 pounds. Let me just throw out there to everybody that that's a body mass index, a BMI of 15. She's clearly underweight. I eat properly. I'm even on the Ectoplan meal plan, which started about 7 months ago. I partake in a yoga class about twice a week. I'm running out of options. I've been to see my family doctor who said that I'm underweight to do genetics, which I'm not sure what she means by that. And she wishes us to give her some advice.
Okay. Do you want to tackle that question?
Sure. Yeah. First of all, I looked into a little bit of the Ectoplan, which is more like a multivitamin that would hope to make you hungry more than anything. But I'm not finding
That's not great news for a lot of the people out there who are trying to diet and are taking multivitamins, is it?
Right. It's not a particular, but it's. I think it's meant to cause a little more hunger. I guess
right.
The way maybe a zinc supplement in an anorexic might help to bring back taste buds or people who've lost their
From time to time, I actually do hear from patients, they say, I couldn't take that multiple. I said, why can't you take the multiple? It's that multiple, it's so rich in B vitamins or something that I'm hungry all the time when I take that multi.
It's
so So it's almost like it's promoting... it's helping to promote cell growth or metabolism, and it increases hunger, so people want to eat more. I mean, that occasionally happens. Not always, but that is sometimes.
Yeah. So, first of all, I would wonder, because she's a constant 90 pounds, I wonder if she would have any deficiencies. I would wonder if she has gluten sensitivity. But before we even go there,
even celiac disease, because that causes chronic underweight.
Yeah, it can cause chronic underweight. I would want to know if she has gluten sensitivity or even other food allergies that may be contributing to malabsorption, possibly a leaky gut. But before we even go there, you know, for a minority of patients who just have trouble gaining weight because that's their metabolism, and barring any underlying medical condition for that, I tell them, hey, eat calorically dense foods. I basically outline what those calorically dense foods are. Eat nuts. Nuts are good for you. Eat some fruit, eat some bananas especially. It's a whole 27 grams of carbs in a medium banana.
I mean, after a look at what
nut
gorillas
butters.
Eat. I mean, look how big
What's
they
that?
Get. Look at what gorillas eat, and they eat bananas, right?
Yeah.
Then they get away, they weigh 600 pounds.
I would have them eat more calories first. I would add on some more complex carbohydrates as well, maybe to stimulate some insulin production, which might stimulate a little bit of fat storage weight gain,
right.
But primarily working out at the gym, strength training
is number one. By the way, do you remember at Rounds the other day, we have one of our staff members, I'm not going to out her, who has always been underweight. She's always been underweight. And we discovered a couple of things about her. One is we discovered she was gluten sensitive. We told her to get off of gluten. So in a way, she actually ate less of certain foods. In addition, she took our suggestion, because I really believe that for some people who are genetically skinny, and God bless those people, because we'd all like to know what their secret is. It's in the genes. There's something about them that they just are underweight. That the solution is to go to the gym and start lifting some weights. And this is the gal who has always been under 100 pounds. She's very petite, but she's healthy. You know, she's not like she's anorexic, but she looks very thin, and she wasn't that happy about it. She wasn't filling out in her clothes. And she proudly told me that she'd gained 5 or 8 pounds. And that doesn't sound like a lot. That sounds like what a lot of people are going to gain over Christmas effortlessly. But for her, it was a tremendous achievement because she built up the correct – she didn't put on a pot belly, which is easy to do, but she actually put on musculature where she wanted it, which is in her arms and her torso, you know, where she wanted to get a little more developed.
And, you know, when we work out with weights, when we do strength training, by stressing our muscles, we're also stressing our bones. We're challenging our skeleton. We're reviving bone mineral density. And this is very, very important, especially in those who are underweight, who may be a little more prone to bone mineral loss later in their lives. So strength training, I also think it's the fountain of youth.
Yes.
Actually, if there is a fountain of youth,
well, it definitely increases growth hormone, and growth hormone helps everything to grow. It doesn't just help your muscles to grow; it also helps your organs, your internal organs, to grow.
Yeah.
And it helps your brain. It actually generates what is called NGF, neurotrophic growth factor, which mm-hmm. helps to build.
BDNF. Right.
Right. Which stands for whatever it is that's miracle growth uh-huh. for your brain cells.
Brain-derived neurotrophic factor.
Bingo.
BDNF. That's it.
Good job.
That's it. Now, we should also add, yes, it does increase growth hormone and all of that,
yep.
but we have to add, you're going to suppress your growth hormone with all that beautiful exercise if then you go have a high-carb meal like a smoothie that's full of sugar at
okay.
your local gym. You don't want to do that.
Okay.
You don't want to do that, especially within 3 hours after exercise.
So in effect, what people are doing on purpose, they think that's going to make them have bigger muscles. They're extinguishing their growth hormone.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So what should people have as a post-workout meal?
What you should go have is some fish and some broccoli, or a salad with some salmon, or a mm-hmm. steak and some asparagus. Go on and eat your meal.
Okay.
Go on and have a regular right. meal that doesn't have a whole lot of sugar in it.
Right. That's good. Instinctually, I do that. I mean, a lot of people say, well, what, you know, magic formula did you take after a workout? And I go, you know, I wait for a half hour, get really hungry after a workout, and then I just eat a meal. Bingo.
That's it.
I have like
Bingo.
An omelet, a veggie omelet, or I have, you know, I might have, if it's later in the day, I'll have some chicken breast or something like that, or, you know, a lean,
mm-hmm.
You know, grass-fed hamburger or something like that with a salad. Fish, salmon, whatever. Okay, shall we move on? I've got another question.
Yeah.
From, did we ever talk to Robin, who says, I am 75, I weigh 52 kilograms. This person must be in Europe or England, because we don't talk about kilograms. 52 Ks is what, about 140 pounds? No, it's about 100.
That's
115
okay.
pounds. I think it's about 115 pounds. You can do the math.
114. Yes, 115 pounds.
Hey, math genius in my head. That's pretty good. And okay, here's the kicker, though. And I have a ferritin level of 271, and a transferrin saturation of 24. This gets a little technical here. And she goes, here's her theory. I believe I have developed this condition by supplementation during 4 pregnancies, drinking and bathing in stream water that is very high in iron, and eating a high meat diet, using iron pots and pans, eating a diet high in vitamin C. All right. Let's break this one down. Okay, so first of all, this person has a ferritin level of 271. That would be a preliminary indication they have too much iron.
Yeah.
However, what confuses me about this question, we're getting a little technical here, is that her transferrin saturation is 24, which is not that high.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not sure if this person has serious iron overload or if this person has an inflammatory problem, because sometimes you can raise ferritin just by virtue of an inflammation.
Yeah.
So I'd have to know, I don't have all the information I need for this kind of person. That's why we see people in person, we do additional tests, we get some history. But I will say this, and I think you can embellish my comments. I do not think that taking iron during 4 pregnancies or drinking and bathing in stream water that is very high in iron. I mean, my goodness, how high in iron could it be? I mean, is it like the stream water from some kind of, you know, iron,
no,
iron
you know
foundry
what? You
or
know,
something?
Dr. Hoffman, out in Long Island,
yeah.
Where we go on the North Fork, the well yes. water there has been found to be high in iron.
Yeah.
It's really not recommended to drink well water unless you've got some amazing purification system. Or I'm
right.
not even sure reverse osmosis does that, but that could be something from the water.
Yeah, I'm not even sure, though, that you given that iron pills, for example, massively mm-hmm. more iron than the iron that's present in water.
Okay.
Using iron pots and pans, I don't know, maybe that, you know, that we recommend that when people are very low in iron, it gives them a little extra iron. But I got to
yeah.
say that, I mean, I think that there's something metabolic going on in some of these people. Not so much they're taking too much iron, but we know that some people have a genetic predisposition to hold on to iron, and it's due to a certain gene, which we can test people for. And it's worse in men than in women, because men, of course, don't menstruate. Women are protected until they go through menopause because they're losing iron every month. And usually the treatment for that is to, A, identify it, and, B, give blood. You know, you basically, you know, top off your tank in terms of your blood. And while it seems like it could weaken you, in a case of somebody already has enough iron, it's going to protect them from the ravages of excess iron. So this is what she says, though. I keep excellent health and want to stay that way, but my medical advisors are very unwilling to remove blood, even at 250-gram units, for fear of causing arrhythmia or anemia. Now, so something is missing a little bit from this picture. I mean, she is a little older. She's 75. She seems to be relatively healthy. She says, as the top level of normal ferritin is half my level, it's worthwhile to seek out an advisor who's willing to de-iron me through a course of venesection. That would be like drawing blood. And the answer is
bloodletting.
Bloodletting. I got to say, I need to know more about this individual.
That's true.
It sounds like this person is in England, although you can't tell from an email, just by virtue of the language she uses and the units of measurement. She's 52 mm-hmm. kilos, and I'm not even sure there's a problem here. That ferritin of 271 represents a serious threat to this person's health. But we do think that excess iron, can act as a heavy metal and is potentially dangerous. So we do look for that. And sometimes it's reasonable to draw blood. But, an older individual has this kind of problem. The drawing of the blood could actually produce some other adverse effects. So I think her doctors don't want to draw the blood because they don't think it's that serious a problem. That's my impression.
Mm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Little technical discussion there. I hope it's enlightening for the rest of our listeners. I got another one here from Lee. Lee is a big fan of Intelligent Medicine. He's in Sparta, New Jersey. And Lee says, if you were designing the diet for a football team, what would it be? Would it be paleo? That's an intriguing question.
Quarterback or defensive line?
That's a really good
linebacker.
How about the offensive line? Because what you want is you want different diets possibly for different players. Because the offensive line, especially the offensive line of the New York Giants, which is very porous right now, could use being about 20 or 30 pounds heavier. And on a paleo diet, it's frankly hard to become really huge. And, it's a little bit like becoming a sumo wrestler. You want throw weight. You want to be able to push back your opponents, with, strategic blocking. On the other hand, you don't want to be so big that you can't move, because otherwise they pull a shift on you and then you can't get to plug up the hole. And, the blitz is on and your quarterback gets sacked. So, I'm sure they really have this down to a science in football, because, even if the rest of us schlumps, we're not worth millions of dollars every year. We're expendable. But football players, they invest a lot of money in football players. They pay them huge salaries and they want them to be on optimal diets. So, no longer is, the training table, I think, is very scientific. I think they try to bulk up, the linemen. They try to keep the speedy, pass receivers, sort of lean and mean, but strong. I don't know that. Do you know any statistics on how many vegetarian NFL football players there are? And I'm not disparaging vegetarianism, but I'm thinking, it may require more protein for repair and muscles.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I mean, but I believe on average a lot of these guys are having it anywhere between 3,500 to 4,500 calories a day.
It's a real, because they're expending tremendous amounts of energy.
Yeah.
And that's a lot more calories than the rest of us are entitled to. But, you just forget just the games. I mean, the games are intense, but the training regimen is extremely intense, especially now in the off season. The old days where the football players used to just party hardy and then just put on those leather helmets and knock themselves out, those days are over. It's a lot of There's a lot of training. There's superb physical conditioning. And the other, you know, point that I'd make is that some teams have done well with a gluten-free regimen for some of the players. You know, that some players have actually come out and said, I feel much better now that I'm gluten-free, because they're feeling lethargic and sluggish. It doesn't apply to every player, but somebody's got a gluten problem, they're not going to feel well. And when it comes to basketball, I happen to have seen an article about the L.A. Lakers. And the L.A. Lakers are going paleo.
Really?
Yeah, not entirely, because they still, you know, expend a lot of calories. But they're going towards a paleo kind. There's a bit of sort of a paleo influence in terms of the training. And,
wow.
So the net result is that they have to do a lot of running back and forth up and down the court, and they don't want to be slowed down by excess flab. So you know that Lauren Cordain, who wrote the Paleo Diet, he was actually originally an exercise physiologist.
Yes.
And he wrote a book called The Paleo Diet for Athletes, where he advocates a paleo diet, not all under all circumstances, but, you know, he wants his athletes to be lean and have a high ratio of muscle to fat. So.
Mm-hmm. So it's paleo diet with some modifications.
Yeah, maybe some modifications, certainly pouring on the carbs might be warranted for those linemen. I mean, they're big, they're huge.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So thanks to Lee for that interesting.
That's a great question. Yeah,
it's like a little bit of a thought problem.
Mm-hmm.
What else you got?
Okay. Let me see here. This is a little bit interesting. This comes from Marilyn. Hello, I'm a 61-year-old female who has not been on any HRT therapy, hormone replacement therapy. In a current lab test, my estrogen level was 379 compared to 1 year ago, it was 17. Okay, she's 61. She says, I just had a second breast reduction. The first in 2005.
A second breast reduction. Wow.
She had a second breast. Under what circumstances would a woman have to undergo two breast reductions?
You know, I don't want to minimize it because, I mean, you know, obviously men are biased. Men are biased in favor of, you know, large breasts. But for a woman who has very large breasts, this is it's a social problem because it attracts a lot of unwarranted attention. And B, it's an orthopedic problem because it's just heavy and uncomfortable to have a large, breast size. So I understand breast reduction. I'm not sure why a second, you know, it's almost like, could you please take a little off the top? Oh, you know, let's take a little more off the top, so to speak, you know, because it wasn't adequate.
The first reduction was done pre or perimenopause, she says.
Yes, yes.
And then the second she just had, around 61 years of age. She says, what would you recommend I do as a follow-up to these high levels?
Well,
from everything I'm reading, it seems most clinicians are overlooking this. I want to know if she's
overweight. About estrogen dominance? Is she talking about estrogen dominance?
Yeah, estrogen level of 379 compared to 1 year ago, it was 17, she says.
Yeah.
She's never been on HRT.
Yeah, that's really a weird question. You know, I got to say, for a listening audience, normally estrogen levels before menopause, bounce around because it depends on what time of the month. So, you know, someone say, measure my estrogen level. I go, it depends. I mean, where are you at in your cycle? If you're, you know, at this point in your cycle, you might have a drop in your estrogen. At some point, you know, you might be very estrogenic, very loaded with estrogen. And
women
know this because they feel kind of swollen or bloated. Their breasts, feel tender or enlarged at certain times of the month. It's very changeable. But after menopause, generally, women's estrogen levels drop certainly below 70 or so. On average, they're about 40 or 50. And in women who have a very profound menopause, where they're almost very, very impoverished of hormones, these are women sometimes have very bad menopause, uncomfortable menopause with a lot of symptoms, their estrogen levels can go into the teens or even single digits. And that's a very, very low estrogen. So when a postmenopausal woman is in the 300s, that's concerning. What's going on that the estrogen levels are so high at 60-something, right? So this is the kind of person that I would need to see, and I would ask, you know, number one, and you asked the right question, is this person obese or overweight? Because the fat cells act to amplify the estrogen that your body makes. Even women who are 90 years old are making a little estrogen. But If you have lots of fat, that'll amplify the estrogen. Alternatively, if you have really lousy liver function, you're not detoxifying your estrogen, so your estrogen levels build up. That can occur with poor liver function, too much alcohol. It can occur with constipation, actually, will increase estrogen levels. That's why that may be associated with higher risk of endometrial cancer or breast cancer. I don't know precisely what's going on with this lady. I mean, what would we do? You know, what are some things that kind of deal with estrogen dominance, the supplements we might use?
Oh, the supplements, certainly flax lignin, something
flax
like
lignans,
Breveil.
Right.
We like calcium D-glucarate.
Yes.
We like DIM.
DIM,
dimethylmethane.
DIM is
wonderful.
Yeah. Which is the
That.
By the way, that's an extract of broccoli sprouts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so those are some of the things. And, you know, certainly normalizing intestinal flora could make a difference because the intestinal bacteria actually play a bit of a role in detoxifying estrogen. And certainly helping with proper elimination can help the body detoxify of excess hormones. But I don't know precisely what's going on with this woman. But she, look, she does exemplify a problem because, incredibly, you know, you'd think that under less influence of hormones after menopause, her breasts would, in fact, shrink. But actually, some women notice that they actually have an increase in the size of their breasts. I mean, some of that's just fat deposition. You know, it's, you know, there's the apples and the pears, and the apples accumulate weight around the midsection, perhaps in the breast area as well.
The entire torso, so to speak.
The torso,
torso.
That's a good way to put it. Okay.
Do you have any questions?
Do I? Yes. I have a very nice pushback from a vegan. She's very diplomatic, but she wants to sort of push back a little bit against something that I said. Dear Dr. Altman, I love listening to your podcast, but I wanted to respond to one small thing with regard to veganism from the July 2013 show. In it, you talk about vegans, quote, outing those who've started to eat meat, and I can understand how you would feel they were behaving badly. What I was referring to was, I think it was a PETA-associated website where they were, you know, they were saying all kinds of really snarky things.
They were outing meat eaters or something, I think.
Right, they were outing former vegans who had gone to the dark side and started to eat meat, but they were doing it in a way that was like a very, you know, like a witch hunt, you know, like shaming them. Like, how could they do this? And, you know, it's like as if it was, I use the word apostate. You know, an apostate, it's a fancy word which means someone who belonged to one religion and then went over to the other side. It's a little bit like, you know, say, you know, a Christian evangelist, you know, became a devout, you know, Shiite Muslim or something. That would be an apostate. Mm-hmm. Somebody's going over to the other side. And, you know, so what I said was, should we talk about diet as like almost in terms of like religious fervor? And the answer is, I think diet is a pragmatic choice. To some extent, it's an ethical choice. But, you know, to be mean to people who change their diet doesn't make sense at all. You know, there's
no.
I mean, if you're.
Diet is a prescription. Our diet is a prescription or should be a prescription based on our metabolism, our biochemistry, our medical conditions. All the rest of it should be gone. I really don't believe there's a place to get all cultish about anything.
Yeah.
And what's healthy for one person isn't necessarily healthy for another. You know, I'm not anti-vegan or vegetarian. If it's healthy for that person, more power. That all the better. That's fine.
And we've actually helped some ethical vegetarians achieve a more balanced diet because sometimes, you know, they may emphasize too much refined starch or carbohydrates, not getting enough, you know, protein sources or healthy fats. And sometimes they're missing certain things which we can give to them in supplements. You know, what's nice now is, you know, we talk about deficiencies in omega-3 fatty acids, which if you don't eat fish, you don't get omega-3 fatty acids. And that's a problem for some vegans. But we now have supplements. We actually have a nice one of our sponsors, the folks who make Dr. Ahira's, they now make something called Chia Omega, which is from chia. And chia is a vegetarian source of omega-3, but also they include some marine sources of EPA and DHA, which are really identical to the EPA and DHA that you get from fish, but it's not from an animal with a face. So you could feel okay as an ethical vegetarian to get marine EPA and DHA, which is made from algae. So that's an example of how, you know, sometimes we'll work with an ethical vegan who doesn't want to have any animal protein. That's okay, and you know, we can make that happen. Anyway, so in this email though, she writes, Marty is her name. However, then you go on to talk about how your own macrobiotic diet made you feel ill over time, which is why you abandoned it. Actually, the macrobiotic diet didn't make me feel ill, but I was developing lots of allergies and skin sensitivities. And I think I was, at the time, I was having too much in the way of grains. I was having too much in the way of carbohydrates, not enough essential fatty acids, and maybe not enough protein. So there's an issue of imbalance. Anyway, what she's saying is that, may I suggest that just as there are many ways to be an omnivore, there are many different vegan diets. You could have, if you weren't doing well on the, I'm paraphrasing here, if you weren't doing well on the macrobiotic diet, you could have addressed that in a manner that did not necessitate moving to animal products. Yeah, I don't know. I'm thinking she may be right. I'm going to concede the point. She also says correctly, I feel that you can have junk food vegans and vegans who do not watch that they get enough B12 and vegans who consider it to be an exclusion diet rather than a wholesome diet. In other words, you can eat well or badly on a vegan diet, but the answer to a bad vegan diet is not necessarily to eat meat. She then goes on to say, I am 50 years old and look and feel great, have no aches or pains at all, look after 2 horses and a small flock of sheep, as well as my family. The family comes last here in this, because she knows. Well, you know, she's a vegan.
Right? Oh,
so
my gosh.
The animals take precedence. Yeah. And most people tell me I look years younger. I certainly feel years young. I am an ethical vegan, as you would guess, a fan of your show. I think that if all those years ago when you were a vegan, you had applied some of the wisdom that your show imparts, you may not have had to go back to animal products. Just a thought. Anyway, she's very, Marty is very laudatory. She says, thank you for a terrific show. I appreciate it so much. If you have done a podcast on estrogen dominance, I would love to know about it. Well, we just talked about it.
That's it. We just talked about it, yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Again, thank you for a terrific show.
Vegans out there.
Yeah.
A note to vegans out there who are basically relying on flax oil supplements.
Yes.
It's good that we have this marine biological supplement because many, many human beings, I think up to 70% of us, lack the enzyme to properly convert the flax fats to essential fatty acids in the body that we need. So that's one of the that's one of the great things about moving forward in this direction. So it makes it easier for vegans to get their essential fatty acids.
And you'll hear more about this product, Chia Omega, in 2014 because they're one of my sponsors on the radio program. Very, very good company. All right. One final question, and this is a question from Larry, who is in New Mexico. Dr. Hoffman, can you tell me what your opinion of doxazosin is? I am taking it for an enlarged prostate and mild hypertension. It seems to interfere with my exercise. I am a long-distance cyclist, and I read that this medicine is dangerous for exercise in the heat, causing potential problems with dizziness, etc. I'm 67 years old. Thank you very much. Signed, Larry. So let me tell you what this medication is. This is what's called an alpha blocker, which is actually a medication that is used for high blood pressure, but it also can be used for the prostate. It goes under various names. Cardura is one of the names, the brand names for it.
He's an avid cyclist.
Pardon me?
He's an avid cyclist, says.
Yes.
And that could be an issue for the prostate, maybe.
Indeed it could be. Yes, a long distance cyclist. I didn't think about that. You know, so you know, some men just by virtue of sitting in that on that hard seat, and believe me, it's very hard. It interferes with their prostate. It can cause prostatic irritation. It can even cause what's called pudendal neuralgia or numbness, which is loss of sexual feeling. And this is, you know, fortunately, you know, spent a lot of time training on a bicycle, especially in the warmer weather. And anatomically, luckily, I'm not susceptible to that, but some men are. But let's just talk about this medication. This medication is going to kill two birds with one stone because he has mild hypertension. He also has an enlarged prostate. It seems to work on the nerves in the prostate, so it reduces frequent urination. But this type of blood pressure medication can be dangerous because it will sometimes excessively lower blood pressure. And in fact, one of the newer urinary drugs has recently been cited as a cause of uncontrolled hypotension. That's uncontrolled low blood pressure, sending people to the hospital to treat low blood pressure. And of course, the problem can be if your blood pressure is too low, you feel dizzy and you faint or you want to hit the deck. And that could be catastrophic for someone who is desirous of exercise. So, that's a concern. That is a concern. Also, many of these medications interfere with proper sweating. And this guy lives in New Mexico when it's hot and dry. And, you know, when you exercise, no matter what temperature it is, you want to sweat. And so that's the problem with some heart medications and blood pressure medications. They may actually impair.
They inhibit
exercise.
Sweating.
Yes. That could cause temperature control problems. You could develop, heat stroke or heat exhaustion. And, you know, what can I say? I mean, it would be desirable if we could achieve the same results with a natural thing like saw palmetto or with a proper diet modification or with magnesium to lower blood pressure or with a maybe there's a dietary modification. Have you noticed that some patients we have are prostate problems, they get rid of certain foods and their prostate doesn't act up?
That's true. That's true. Yeah. So that could be something. Wow.
By the way, another medications that are similar to this include Hytrin, which is commonly used for prostate problems, you know, like urinary problems. Flomax, commonly used for urinary problems. Mm-hmm. And these medications will, sometimes they overdo it. You know, they're supposed to work on the prostate specifically, but they sometimes have other effects elsewhere in the body that are undesirable. So that's the problem.
Yeah. Well.
So that's the, that's the deal on that. I mean, you know, and then again, that's one of the reasons why we are constantly called upon to seek non-pharmacological approaches to many problems, because generally they're safer, and involve less in the way of side effects. All right.
Yep.
Well, okay. So that pretty much does it for our pre-Christmas edition of the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. If you have anything else to say today?
No, I just want to remind everybody about our upcoming lecture on menopause and andropause on Wednesday, January 15.
Okay.
And then following again in February 26th will be the War on Natural Medicine.
Wow. Okay.
Reservations are necessary, so please call us at 212-779-1744 to reserve your seat.
Did you post that yet at drhoffman.com?
Yep.
Okay, great. So go to the website and check it out for information, but you can't sign up on the website. You need to call via the phone.
Yes.
All right. And with apologies to our listeners in Melbourne, Australia, you may not make it this time, but, New York is a nice place to visit. Maybe you can get an economy flight and check out our next one. All right. Thanks very much, Layla. A very Merry Christmas to you and your family. And
thank you very much.
Enjoy your
holiday. And to you too.
Holiday.
Yes.
Thank you very much. And we're not going anywhere, so we'll be around next week. Maybe we'll knock off one more podcast prior to the end of 2013.
Thanks, Dr. Hoffman.
We'll sing Auld Lang Syne. Thank you for joining us. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. You've just listened to a free podcast brought to you by yours truly and the Hoffman Center. F-R-E-E is my favorite four-letter word, but these podcasts do involve time and money to produce. And so in the spirit of defraying some of our very real production costs and to keep these podcasts flowing, I'd like to ask you to consider a couple of things. First, if you like what you're hearing, please share these podcasts with your friends and relatives. Our object is to continue the spectacular growth of the Intelligent Medicine Podcast with the goal of attaining 250,000 podcast downloads per month in 2014. I know that with the help of dedicated listeners like you, it'll happen. Second, go to drhoffman.com and click on the store and consider buying your supplements via our convenient internet portal, or call the Hoffman Center and talk to one of our friendly supplement advisors. We only stock the very highest quality supplements, some of which are very hard to find elsewhere, the very same supplements that I talk about here on Intelligent Medicine and that I prescribe to my patients at the Hoffman Center. And finally, consider becoming a patient at the Hoffman Center. I can personally perform an extensive workup on you, applying all the Intelligent Medicine principles that you hear about on these podcasts, or, alternatively, make an appointment with Layla Mutin, our Hoffman Center nutritionist. You already know her as a frequent contributor on Intelligent Medicine, and she'll provide you with expert advice on diet and supplements. Anyway, thanks for listening, and continue enjoying our Intelligent Medicine podcasts.